Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Betches Media presents.
If you feel depressed and if you feel anxious and you feel confused, you know what? Welcome to the club.
Gazpacho police.
Oh my God!
What a stupid son of a bitch.
He believes that it's a woman's right, it's a woman's body, and it's her choice.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
Sayonara, sucka!
Hello, hello. I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Good morning, gang. How did we sleep last night? I slept terribly.
I mean, it's crazy to field a lot of like questions about if you're okay and alive throughout the day.
Those are some micro traumas. Yeah.
I just kept getting... As people that I knew in other parts of the country started either like waking up or checking the news for the first time, it was like throughout the day I was getting like, hey, I'm sorry, I just saw what happened in Brooklyn. Are you okay? And I'm like, I mean, obviously I appreciate every single person, yeah. But it was just funny because it was like, every time I was trying to like go to a different part of my day, someone else was finding out about it for the first time and wanted to make sure I was okay, which again is very nice, but it's just like, oof.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I actually have a friend that's her express stop. And so that was actually my first like instinct was to go check on her because I know that she does. Commute. She has a job that she cannot work from home for. Mm. So I was like just checking in. It's like, are you okay? Like, and everything like that. But overwhelmingly, I was surprised. I mean, I'm always find it deeply grateful again as somebody who's like, my family is here. Mm-hmm. So I was just like checking in and making sure people hadn't been doing, you know, anything that would put them in the area. But I don't live in that part of Brooklyn's very large.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And just to be clear, Brooklyn is quite large. That area is not anywhere close to many other areas that perhaps you have heard of. Williamsburg is in fact the exact opposite direction. So, like, there's a lot of people who are just like, oh, my God, I heard something happened in Brooklyn. It's like, okay, but that's like hearing, like, something happened in the United States.
Yeah, Brooklyn is quite, like, it's just, like, a huge portion of Long Island. And obviously where I am in Manhattan is nowhere even close. So, I don't know, just last night, like, obviously this isn't the same thing as the Boston bombing. It's different. But I couldn't sleep because I just was like, this person is still out there. And I just think that as they chase him, he's going to become potentially more dangerous as he feels cornered. It's been rough, but we're going to discuss some follow-ups. Obviously we're fine. We're very privileged. Yeah. The scenes from yesterday were just like heinous. I think that's why it was, we're used to seeing mass shootings, right? But I haven't seen like bloodied people coming out of our subways before, you know, to see it in your own setting was very, it just shifted something. It was very disturbing.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was tough, like, even today, you know, writing things up for the newsletter, every, like, new detail that you learn is so scary as a New Yorker or whatever. Like, I didn't realize that he had started when on the train. Right. He opened fire on the train, and then it got to the station. I thought it was, like, all in the station, and so something about that detail just really, really scared me, because that's, like, you're trapped on the train. If someone puts out, he like did two smoke canisters or whatever. I just can't imagine something scarier than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to discuss some follow-ups from this attack, of course, because it's not just a New York story. This is a huge national story. And a lot of the themes that are coming up now and will come up are going to be common themes we're going to see potentially even in the midterms, but especially from our politicians who lead cities or want to lead them. As of this morning, a man named Frank James has moved from person of interest to suspect. A person, and this is at about 12. We started at 12 at noon Eastern time. A person of interest means they think this person has information about the crime, and suspect means they think they did it. So like a full 24 hours after the attack, actually probably like 26 or 27 hours, is when we got the thing on our phone saying, please look out for this man. The New York Times found some background information on James. He appears to be the same person who posts, he's a black man who appears to be the same person who posts these rants to a YouTube channel that the New York Times described as bigoted rants. I didn't watch any of them, but they looked quite unhinged. He was posting videos from hotels throughout the past few weeks. He has addresses in Wisconsin and Philadelphia. Neighbors of the suspect in Wisconsin told the New York Times that they thought he was like a little bit of an unusual dude, but you know, who doesn't have a weird neighbor? But they also told the paper that they were just surprised that James could even move fast enough to pull something like this off. This brings us to what appear to be, can call them failures, we can call them mishaps, we'll see what the police decide to call them, but some mishaps with the law enforcement and the tools we pay for to help them. I mean, this is just what I keep thinking about, is that, like, you know, we just did our taxes, the fucking money. I want my money back because of this. After we recorded yesterday, Mayor Eric Adams did confirm that a security camera at the 36th Street stop was not working. And I believe this comes after just months ago. I believe he said that was going to be addressed and that cameras had been fixed. Patrol also might not have stopped train traffic early enough. That could have allowed the suspect to get away. And as we said yesterday, there's already police everywhere. I mean, I saw a lot of people tweeting, like, if you don't know that our police presence is unusual, I guess we're just so used to it. But people say that when they come, people were pointing out that when they come to New York, it can feel like a police state, especially in the past 6 months when they've put a lot of cops in subways and they're just stopped everywhere. And there are obviously homeless people everywhere, and they are either nicely trying to assist them, but usually just trying to, you know, remove them for being a blight. As we said yesterday, there are police everywhere. This attack still happened. And the city budgeted $10 billion for the NYPD in 2020. That's as much as Congress is just authorized to fight like COVID for the next 6 months in the whole nation. Next year, Eric Adams wants all city agencies to cut their budgets by 3%. So that's education, that's housing, that's like childcare programs. It's every agency, with the exceptions, of course, of the NYPD and the Department of Corrections. So I know my question this morning, even with things unfinished and some loose ends, is just why one of the world's or the world's most expensive police force was unable to prevent this, but unable to catch a lone attacker whose neighbors say can't move fast.
He's not quick on his feet.
Not quick enough.
Yeah, I mean, he's like approaching like Social Security age, and we're paying out like pensions for all of these cops who can't catch up with him. That's, yeah. I mean, it just kind of demonstrates the like ridiculousness, like the inherent absurdity of being like, okay, cops are going to make us safer, and then like an unsafe thing happens, and then they're like, okay, more cops, I guess. Like, why are the amount of cops right now not adequate, apparently, to do basic things?
Well, I was saying this in the newsletter, but like, any number times zero is still zero, babe. Like, it doesn't, they've prevented zero, and you can double the amount of cops, but like, I mean, for me, it just feels, it's so crazy to see, you know, after all of the talk that we've had about police funding and the conversation around defund the police and what we actually mean when we say that and how money can be allocated to different areas, you know, it's crazy that the security cameras aren't working. It's crazy that the infrastructure of the subway is such that this was more easily able to happen, that the one cop who was there, his walkie-talkie wasn't working. Like, what? There's basic equipment things that are not up to snuff. That's where any like new money should be going. If we're gonna send new money anywhere, it's to fix these different fail safes that broke. It's not to add a million more cops to the subway who are just gonna do the same thing. And you know, when I first moved to the city, we still had stop and frisk here. So I know well, a lot of people here know what it looks like to just have cops stopping people constantly at every subway. And it's actually more unsafe. It's actually upsetting. When I lived here, all of the stop and frisk situations that I saw were just like young black teenagers being harassed. So I don't really see how that prevents what happened yesterday.
And I believe it is a mathematical certainty that more cops means more harassment of black teens.
Yeah, obviously. Sure. Obviously.
The thing with bringing in more cops is not only were they able to prevent this, but it's like they missed it. Things will always, like, cops miss things. Even the best cops will probably miss things. But, like, adding more does not, without tweaking the system, without making sure their supplies are adequate, like, why does throwing a cop into the mix is not going to do anything to make the walkie-talkie work? Like, it makes no sense. It's completely senseless. And it's just going to result, I mean, a good example is that when Eric Adams ran, or he brought back that, like, anti-gun unit that around June 2020, when people started talking about what defund the police means, I think that was sort of like put to the side. He basically brought it back. He frames it as like an anti-gun task force to take illegal firearms off the streets. But nearly a month later, the most common charge and arrest made by the anti-gun unit was for possession of a forged instrument, such as a fake ID or stolen credit card, and or just like drug possession or possessing paraphernalia. And they've taken as many guns off the street as they have ticketed people for possession. So it's just further criminalizing people. We talked yesterday about ghost guns and how much they've been proliferated. But I don't know, have you even just been thinking about, like, we know that AI police is problematic, but it's like, can we just make these fuckers better at their jobs? Like, most jobs have job expectations. Like, these are the only people that's like, well, we're just going to, normally if you fail to fulfill your responsibilities, it's known as a bad business model when you just add more people rather than solving the problem. You're just going to create more problems.
Yeah, one of the biggest problems is that cops don't actually have a purpose. Like, that is like a legal thing. Like, they do not need to know the law. They can be complete ignorance of the law and enforce it. It's kind of like, but what? Like, how are you supposed to enforce laws that you don't even know whether or not they're laws? You have no right to protect. Cops are not supposed to protect you. I know that that sounds completely insane, but in fact, there is no legal right to protection. So if there's like a shootout on a train or something like that, turns out the cop has absolutely no responsibility to step into that situation and defend people. So like there's like multiple layers in which it's like we have created a basically harassment and surveillance state. These are agents of harassment and surveillance. They're not there to enforce laws, not really, because they don't need to know the law. They're not there to protect citizens. They have no obligation to do so. They aren't there to prevent crime. Not that that could be done. Like, what does that even mean? Are they supposed to be psychic and figure out, like, this person is a future criminal? Like,
exactly.
Yeah, okay,
exactly.
Cool, Minority Report. It's just, like, it continues to be, like, a blatantly obvious and problematic structure where it's like, what are these people here to do? And we just want to pump more money into it because we have, the status quo does not need evidence. They don't need facts. They don't need anything. They can just say, let's make police responsible for everything. You had bad parents? Cool. We'll fix that with some police.
It's also wild to me because so much of these budgets, like when they say like, oh, $10 billion for police, like some of that is to just create more cops. But also a lot of it is just for bizarre gadgets for them to have, like insane guns. I mean, I think we talked about this yesterday, but Eric Adams did that photo shoot with a robot dog that can eat smoke. I Googled it. That dog is $75,000. And it's like a smoke eating dog. At one point they were like, it can detect smoke. I'm like, well, we have that technology and we've had that for a long time. So
we have eyes.
Like we do not need a $75,000 smoke detector, but it's, I mean, it's, But then they're like, oh, we need to increase the budget and we need to have more cops. And it's like, no, maybe we just need to reroute the budget we already have to make sure that the security cameras work in all of the subway stations and that the cops who we already have working walkie-talkies. Like, maybe instead of a tank, he can have a walkie-talkie that works.
Mm-hmm. I just think about, have you guys ever watched like a British true crime show where, like, you know, they have CCTV everywhere. They have it fucking everywhere. And I'm not saying that's the solution, but like, if you watch a British, like they you can tail somebody just from the fucking cameras in London. And then just the contrast to hear that we didn't, this one camera in Brooklyn, but also it's, of course it wasn't working. Like, had you asked me 2 days before that attack, do you think that camera's working? I would have said no.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. That camera's not working. Why is everything so janky here?
There's actually an explanation for this, and it starts with George Pataki and Rudolph Giuliani. But the broader discussion is that
the beginning of every good story does.
The beginning of every great story. No, but fundamentally, there is a lack of respect for urban spaces in this country, and that starts and ends with the greatest and biggest city in the United States. And, like, it's very hard to argue that New York is not emblematic of some really large structural problems that our government has with investing in urban spaces and believing that they are, that cities have an important part, are an important part of the American ecosystem. We mass transit funding, like, feds basically don't invest in mass transit.
I'm so sad Millie's not here today because she's our most impassioned urbanist. She would be like going off.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very much of the same place. It's mm-hmm. like we have deliberately undermined cities and we've been doing it for a really long time.
You're a lifelong New Yorker.
Bringing up the Permanent Reapportionment Act of 1929, which explicitly ignored the 1920 census to go back to the 1910 census so that way they could ignore how big cities had gotten and prevent the country from being dominated by, you know, majorities.
Yeah, we got all the boroughs have how many people and how many reps? Not enough. Like,
yeah, no, not enough. We're nowhere close. And that's part of the granular problem, right? Is that the problems of city dwellers? I mean, you've got like close to a quarter, like 750,000 people being represented by one congressperson. Mm-hmm. And then right. It's like, okay, well, Wyoming has 7 times as much like you are getting so much more granular representation as from Liz Cheney. Than you are from Ocasio-Cortez. And like, that's a structural problem that has nothing to do with their individual capacities or offices. And like, that happens when it's why New York City subways do not have the resources that they actually need. They don't get the repairs. They don't get the updates. These are bigger things. And then you get into bigger and bigger things like housing in the city. You know, the anti-Asian hate crimes that have been suffused from rhetoric from the top, from Trump, and then the lack of rhetoric in some ways from Democrats saying like this is unacceptable. It becomes a melange of terrible things.
Yeah, and that's for all cities, obviously, not just New York City. If you live in any densely populated area, you probably aren't getting the same representation. And yeah, that makes so much sense that we just literally don't have as many people in D.C. who can be like, we need money for our security cameras, who are watching thousands of people circulate a single subway station. Maybe they don't need another stop sign in Wyoming. I don't know.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again.
There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I also want to spend a second talking about the media coverage of events like this. I've been referencing the New York Times a lot, but there has been criticism of how they've covered this that I think is reflected in how some of our politicians react or will react as well. I don't think it is just the New York Times. I certainly think outlets like The Post and obviously Fox News are way worse, but they're the paper of record. They have a ton of subscribers, and more importantly, they have a ton of subscribers outside of the city. So I think they are really, I think that I saw a lot of people, this is an original thought, I saw a lot of people say yesterday that what people think crime is like in New York City, New Yorkers have a totally different understanding or perception of it than people that live outside the city. I mean, we heard from family members. I have my wedding coming up, and I know that family members are probably like, ooh, Brooklyn, you know, and that's great. Yeah. That's crazy to me.
I have noticed that a lot. I mean, leading up to my wedding and then also after, I've just been asked by a lot of family members outside the city, like, about crime or if I have noticed crime or have been a victim of crime. And I'm like,
Elise, have you been a victim of crime?
Yeah. I'm like, I'll let you know if I am, but
yeah, you'll know.
Check your 401k. That's
yeah, exactly. have you seen my rent?
No, I definitely still feel safer in my New York City apartment than I would living in like a house alone in the suburbs where all the true crimes happen? No, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely feel safer like walking home from the subway than I would like jogging in a neighborhood.
And we're both white women. So that's, yeah, that has a huge impact on that. But
yeah.
No,
yeah.
I think that like, I mean, it's really hard because, you know, I've been here. So like I was here, I grew up in the 90s in New York. So like when people were like, oh, is there like a lot of crime? I'm staring at them like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't mean that it's like perfectly. First of all, have you gotten humans together? It is unsafe. That just by aggregating humans, you have made yourself unsafe. It doesn't matter how big or small the group is. We've all seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Now, but the point is that like, you know, New York has actually had like pretty significant drops in crime over the years. And there's a certain amount of, especially projected outwards, it's like, if it bleeds, it leads, which is like a very old news maxim. And then you've got like the certain sense of like, ooh, you know, it's the only major city that is majority minority. So that adds even more where it's like, you have no idea who could be skulking. And it's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, there are increases in all of this, but like, let's talk about poverty. Let's talk about that the largest school district in the country has 1 in 10 of its students housing insecure or homeless. Let's talk about the fact that rents are rising faster. If people who are not from New York or don't live here don't understand that you're required to have, in order to legally sign a lease, you're supposed to have 40 times an income in rent. So you need to take the rent, multiply it by 40, and that's how much you're supposed to have. The median income in the city is just under, in 2019, before times, was just under $70,000. That was for a family. That's
not enough to rent an apartment.
Divide that by 40. There's no way.
Yeah.
And then like rents are like way higher, even for like a one bedroom. So you now have like multiple people trying to live in spaces that are too small because they can never afford to buy. And there's no hope of keeping a roof over their head unless you gather enough people that you're making, you know, six figures once you combine the incomes of 5 or 6 people. And remember that minimum wage in New York City is $15, which works out to about $30,000 a year. Yeah. This is not sustainable in any meaningful way. So structurally, we are not helping people survive on the basics right now. We don't have, I mean, the pandemic threw everything out. We still haven't recovered the jobs from that. There's so much damage happening to the city, and everyone's going around being like, okay, well, some people, homeless people or unhoused people are like attacking people with hammers. And I'm like, that is just, yes, that is obviously a problem. I don't want to downplay that trauma, but like there are much larger structural forces that no one wants to address. So you're tossing it onto, oh, this is crime. And it's like,
right. They're just, because if you would read the New York Times' coverage of this, you would think that all the things that Caitlin just mentioned have absolutely nothing to do with crime, which like empirically it does. So just some examples of the specific coverage. One example was that yesterday they first published a story with a very straight headline that said people shot in Brooklyn subway. And then they later changed it to shooting in subway station heightens simmering fears. When you're reading articles on the Times, there's always a portal that says, like, here's what else you need to know, like all websites. And sometimes these are auto-populated, but usually an editor selects them or can select them. And just people were pointing out that all of the content associated with the attack yesterday connected it to growing fears about New Yorkers about crime. Like, there's a single boogie crime man that we are all petrified of, and that the only solution is more police, I would say, was that. That's the biggest thing they point out. And, you know, I've been getting a lot of feedback from our audience recently that something they like about the podcast is that we can sort of like have conversations about how our opinions change with more information. And this is sort of an example of that for me. Like, I saw this thread last night, and I do have a personal connection to the New York Times Metro desk, so that probably was part of it. But I was like, didn't think that these attacks were necessarily fair. I was like, why are you picking on this wording? And, you know, my dear fiance unpacked it all for me and now is very pleased that I'm now discussing it on the podcast today. But yeah, I mean, this is, like I said, this is the paper of record, and the words that they choose to use are going to affect millions of people's opinions outside of the city. And like we were saying, they're just quoting police and government officials who want them to think that crime is this untamable monster, that it is not their fault, and that all that can help is more police. So all they were quoting yesterday were government officials saying, we are going to respond to this with more police. Just, you know, taking their quotes, not appearing to challenge them. So critics of the Times coverage just pointed out that, you know, to refer to this attack as like part of a broader narrative of the more crime is also bad faith, because this was so unusual. I think that's why it shook us so much. We haven't seen an attack that this person definitely planned, it seems, whereas in the past they've been a little bit more random. More broadly, when reporters cover the police, like I said, they often use the police and other law enforcement government officials as the sources. And as Caitlin said, when we're talking about crime in the U.S., we have to talk about mental health. We have to talk about the insane numbers of guns we have in this country. So like I mentioned, I, you know, originally thought that the thread that I pulled a lot of this information from was being very nitpicky and just wasn't being helpful. And I was trying to figure out, like, are publications like the New York Times, are they falling into traps laid for them? Or are they do they have an active interest in promoting propaganda that helps them? Or is it more, Caitlin, just the bleeds it leads? It's all about the media narratives or the media landscape and incentives.
I guess I'll start. I mean, I think that these are symbiotic institutions. Like, the New York Times has always been a status quo paper. It's never been, like, bleeding edge. Like, hey, maybe we should change things. Famously, if you go back through its archives, it's like, Hitler, not really a big deal. And, you know, like, mm-hmm. segregation, we could probably keep it longer. Like, it just has a lot of opinions that are terrible over the years. And that's because of an editorial bent that is, again, very regressive to the status quo. So, like, cops are the status quo, and police are, like, an easy shortcut. You know, people think, I want to feel safe. And white people in particular have been told that police are a form of being safe, you know. Police interact with white people very well. Most people think of cops as their neighbors and friends. People know a lot of people know officers or detectives or whatever, and we are deluged in like Law and Order and mm-hmm. you know every single law enforcement show. Like, they wrap it up within half an hour. All of them are motivated by good reasons. None of them are on the take. And they all go home to 2.5 kids and a, you know, picket fence and try to be better people every day. It's mm-hmm. like, no, it's not real. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just, I mean, honestly, all of this just kind of And the reliance on the police as like first sources, I imagine it is easier to get the police's side as a story comes out and people have to put stories out. But you have to remember, like, the Minneapolis Police Department on the day of George Floyd's death put out that press release that initially got reported that that he like physically resisted officers, and that it was like a complete whitewashing of obviously what we now know to be like one of the most heinous crimes by a cop in like, I mean, it started like a national protest movement, da da da. But their initial press release was like, guy acting ornery and something happened. We don't know. Yeah. Like, so you would just think that now, one would hope that now, after we've known and seen that they are not necessarily the most reliable first source for information about stuff like this, that the New York Times would include different perspectives. And also, the New York Times has like, it's like famous slogan or whatever was like, all the news that's fit to print. Yeah. And so the things that they leave out, it's an implicit way of saying, oh, it's not important for us to talk about mental health, or it's not important for us to talk about the fact that people are out on the street right now. I know people whose rent was raised by over $1,000 and they don't know what to do. And like, they have to figure out where they're going by June. Like, when I talk to people who ask me about the crime or what's going on in New York, what I try to tell them is like, yeah, there's definitely a sense of desperation in the city that I haven't seen before. And there's definitely a different level of human suffering that I have seen in this city. But it's not, I don't think of that as crime. I think of that, mm-hmm. or I don't think of that as crime in the way that they think of it. I think it's a crime that rents have doubled after a pandemic and people don't have health insurance and whatever. But I feel like what I see is happening is a way more, as we've been talking about, systemic thing that is sad, and it is creating a lot of sadness and desperation and quote unquote criminality in its wake. But that's not why it's happening. Like, it's not just because criminals have appeared everywhere.
Yeah, you both said it so well. Yeah. So should we pivot to some British news?
Absolutely.
Should we lighten up?
Well, like, actually, one more point on that was that, like, people always ask, like, are you scared? And to me, there's not really much point in being scared. And this came out yesterday a lot because I am personally not willing to change my lifestyle, and a lot of people can't. So, like, you know, Jim Sciutto on CNN got some shit yesterday. We gave him some shit for being like, and it's, look at these New Yorkers getting right back to work. And it's like, homegirl can't take the day off. Because her rent just went up.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Like, when our taxes are crazy to pay for the cameras that don't work. What do you mean? We're like, oh, that was just another wild morning in New York. No.
Look at these New Yorkers. They just walk right by trauma and clock in. And it's like, we don't want to do that, actually.
Yeah, this is not, they're going
to
fucking.
The rent has doubled. And if I don't go to work, I will lose my home. So,
oh God.
Yeah, I saw a shooting and had to walk to work. Like,
I just hope they don't put this in just like that.
No, I get it. But, you know, the city survived after 9/11. And I think, like, when you go through an experience like that, like, there's a certain amount of resilience from New York, who's been a first strike city since nuclear weapons were developed. Like, you're just a sense, like, you could at any moment experience this thing. And it's like, you know, my parents did duck and cover drills. Like, mm-hmm. it's not, it ultimately, when you stop and think about it, it's like, you know what? We're going to have to live life. We're going to have to continue doing what we do. There's no way around this. This is the nature of being in one of a world-class city. And, you know, like, there are just going to be experiences. The thing that bothers me is, like, how normalized gun violence has become in our country, that we, like, that happens everywhere. And that, to me, is more problematic, that people have to get up and go back to work after a shooting, mm-hmm. or something like that, because we just accept that guns are a way of life here. And that does not happen other places. So, like, yeah, dealing with, like, a terrorist attack, like, people in London got up again. Like, people in Barcelona, like, you get up again. Mm-hmm. But that the level of just casual gun violence that happens in our lives, that shit's weird. And that should make us all stop.
Yeah. And that was also something that people were pointing out just in the coverage of this, which is like anytime we're talking about a mass shooting, we should talk about the just incredibly aberrant amount of guns in our country compared to other countries such as England.
England!
The NBA playoffs are back. And on FanDuel, new customers can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Back in the day, news like this, your crew would have been writing each other letters.
Dearest Benjamin, wonderful news from the East. The spread has been covered.
Or maybe you'd use your phone to actually call someone.
Man, you see that dunk? Man, I saw that dunk.
But these days, it's all about the group chat.
I love that high-fiving kitten emoji.
No matter how you tell them, let your crew know that all new FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Ooh, Morse code. Classic. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Life is full of things to manage. Your work, your family, your plans, and your treatment. Consider Kesimpta, ofatumumab 20 milligram injection. You can take it yourself from the comfort of home. If you're ready for something different, ask your healthcare provider about Kesimpta and check out the details at kesimpta.com. Brought to you by Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation.
Pip, pip, it's British news. So, okay, today's British news also is brought to you by a personal plug from me.
Oh, yes.
Before we get into it, I did want to let all of our sub listeners know that I have two live shows coming up that I would love to see you all at. Number one, in Brooklyn, we have a live show called Just Married that I host with my husband. That's Friday, April 22nd at 8:30 p.m. at Eris in Williamsburg. It's bachelor party themed, so we're going to be playing games and doing bachelor party related activities. Yeah. And then number two, this is a SUP exclusive. I haven't even posted it on Instagram yet, and I don't think I'm going to for another 2 days, but
wow,
I'm doing my first ever solo show, which means like it's just me talking for probably like 45 minutes.
I mean, we just did it. But we were here with you.
I know. But you did just me about my life and whatnot. So that's going to be May 12th at 7 p.m. at Under St. Mark's here in New York in Manhattan. I don't even have a ticket link yet. I just want to get it in people's minds. And that also is going to be live streamed. So people who aren't in New York can watch it. And with that word from our sponsor, it's British news. All right, guys. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been fined by London's Metropolitan Police for partying. This is all in relation to hashtag Partygate, which is a scandal that's been going on in England for a while. Basically, Johnson violated restrictions on indoor gatherings back in June of 2020 when he and his team held a birthday party. There were like a bunch of different parties. There was a lot of parties. Basically, another thing to remember is that England actually locked down in a way that, like, I mean, in New York, we had, like, a lockdown, and in major cities, we had lockdowns, but all of England had a serious lockdown where it was like, you're actually not leaving the house. So, and it was seriously enforced as well, but now it's come out that during all of this time, Boris Johnson was having parties at 10 Downing Street, which is like their little prime minister's house. At the time he was having these parties, people were only allowed to socialize outdoors in groups of six, and there were no indoor gatherings permitted. So
not a one.
Definitely not cool at all. Johnson never denied that this happened, but he questioned if it counted as a gathering, which I think is really funny. It's like, no, there were just kind of a lot of people in the house, but we weren't gathering.
We weren't together.
We were there were some were upstairs, some were downstairs. So his team seems to be trying to take the fall for this, saying that it was actually a surprise party and that they were like, oh, oops, Boris didn't know because it was a surprise. And it's like, okay, but you could stop it after the surprise, whatever. This is one of many gatherings that happened at Downing Street. They happened at the height of the pandemic. One big party reportedly happened the night before Prince Philip's funeral, which is kind of sad.
It was so sad because it was like such a viral picture of the Queen sitting alone. And then to find out that like the leaders were just...
Yeah, so like Philip's funeral had to abide by these rules. The Queen had to be alone at the funeral, but Boris Johnson was having parties. I think they also fined his...
Yes,
basically their like treasury secretary, the Chancellor of the Exchequer or whatever.
People are calling for them both to resign, which does not seem...
Yeah, I mean, people... This is... I feel like from afar, it seems like maybe it's not that big of a scandal, but it's actually an enormous scandal, and people are really, really pissed because, I mean, I get it. Like, if you had had to be in lockdown, you can't... It is illegal for you to have a gathering of more, and that's actually being enforced, and then you find out he's having Christmas parties, a birthday party, et cetera, et cetera. I'd be pissed too.
Yeah. I feel like if you like want a party, it sounds like going into government in the UK is a great route because they're just always doing cocaine.
You could also be a Republican.
I think Madison Cawthorn belongs in Parliament.
He's missed his calling.
Born in the wrong place. Born in the wrong place. They can take him. That is our show for today. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast. Bye.
Bye.
The Betches Sup Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales-Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com.
Betches.